Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. This morning, we'll be continuing with our month-long theme, focusing on women empowerment, mompreneurs. And we will be talking about wealth accumulation and preservation for women. Joining me this morning is my special guest, Carice Slaughter, a mom, a successful businesswoman, a certified financial planner, a personal financial coach, a small business consultant to many women. She has helped them to understand that wealth is not only measured by assets, but more importantly by spirit, intellect, family, and community. Her mission is to show hardworking, successful businesswomen how to view values as virtues and not as vulnerabilities. She empowers them to become more valuable to their communities as well as family. Good morning, Carice. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing wonderful, Johnny, and thank you for having me. I'm very excited about your show and what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, it's a pleasure to have you. I know you yourself as a mompreneur, and the beauty about this is that you are also a financial planner and a personal financial coach. And what I'm trying to do for this show today is to talk about financial planning and, as I mentioned, wealth accumulation, preservations for women. Those mompreneurs, you know, it's wonderful to make money, but at the same time, you've got to be able to know how to manage it and making sure that it's taken care on the back end. So let's get started talking about how did you get started in your career from the early years to now.
Well, it's a long and interesting story, so I'll just give you the real short version. Ever since I got married, because of my husband went back to school after we were married, and so mm-hmm. that meant we needed extra income, but he didn't have full time to work, and I had two little babies, so I was always looking for opportunities, mm-hmm. and found that I could be very successful with just about any opportunity as far as making money. It was simply a matter of what was I willing to exchange for that money. Was I willing to exchange time, which was very valuable to me as a young mother with my children and my husband? We had very little of that to spare, but if I was willing to exchange time and learn a skill or learn a product line or get some knowledge, then I could exchange that for money. The problem that I kept running into was that once I started earning that money was that then I had two jobs. I not only had to make money or do a job, but then I had to run a business. I had to do my business and run my business, mm-hmm. and that required more time. And to me, when I first looked at it, it seemed like that the planning and the budgeting and all of that, managing the assets or the money that I made, I didn't feel I was being paid for that time. And at first, I didn't put a high value on that because that wasn't out in front of my customers or that wasn't working and consulting with my clients. Mm-hmm. And so I tended to push that off to the side, and it would pile up on me and it would bother me. And I finally came to a point after going through this several times and getting to, like, for instance, one of those deadlines like April 15th and realizing all my books aren't together and had to stay up night after night, I realized I needed a system. I needed to understand not just making money, but managing money. Mm-hmm. And that got me on a road to figuring out what it was all about. And that led me to a deeper understanding that it really wasn't just about making money and managing money, but understanding why I was doing those things. And that led me to eventually developing the purpose-directed wealth strategies. Mm-hmm. To help women take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were going through this whole process, and obviously you mentioned that, you know, you were a mom and a wife and as a business, how challenging was that in the sense of did you have any background prior to all this? I mean, were, you know, traditionally, of course, I would not say just the man managing all the monies. I know my mom certainly did a very good job for us. I mean, in my book, I talk about, you know, she's certainly the chief operating officer of the company,
mm-hmm.
the Tan company that is home, Tan family, actually. And so it was quite interesting on how she was able to manage all this. How is that compared to when you were growing up and, say, the early years?
You know that I unfortunately did not grow up with a background of
mm-hmm.
learning those things in the home. I learned a lot about managing a home
mm-hmm.
and about the very basics of budgeting for planning the household bills and the things. But to do projections to understand
mm-hmm.
how to grow that,
mm-hmm.
because I always viewed the family budget as a static budget rather
right.
than a dynamic budget. And that's the key that I was missing, was understanding that dynamic cash flow and how to manage that and project for future growth.
Mm-hmm.
So I was lacking in that area and had to find mentors and coaches and people. I read a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Johnny, I have to admit that sometimes I failed. There are several business ventures that I attempted, like maybe to be a distributor or
mm-hmm.
in different areas, typically in the direct sales or owning my
mm-hmm.
own business.
Mm-hmm.
The business would just, I wouldn't say it was a huge flop because it wasn't ever a huge success,
right.
but it would just piddle out. I couldn't get it together. And that happened to me a couple of times in my early time that I would just finally decide, this isn't for me. And when I look back on it now, it wasn't so much that the business wasn't for me. I just didn't have the knowledge and information to manage it well and project growth and understand what I was exchanging and then how to be efficient in that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that all these led you to your proprietary system of purpose-directed wealth strategies for women. Now, explain to us a little bit about the purpose-directed wealth strategies that you have came up with.
Well, the thought that came to me and what I really felt inspired to help women understand is that whatever we do in life, we do for a purpose, whether we have identified it or not. We're all created by God for a specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
If we understand and believe that He is our Father, He really created mankind for a relationship with Him. That was His whole goal. And so to this day, that's His desire, is for us to be in relationship with Him. So there's an overall purpose in our life for that, but I'm talking about a more specific, unique, individual purpose that aligns itself with that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we each individually understand our purpose in life, then we begin to align our objectives and our goals and our values with that purpose. And your purpose should direct you where you're going. Your purpose is like the wind in a sail. It directs you toward where you're supposed to go. And as I begin to look at and dig deeper into success and failure in business and in just in general in life with different people, what caused them to succeed? And one common denominator is the people who succeeded at the higher levels were people who had identified their purpose and kept their goals and their objectives in line with that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But I also found, and what I really wanted to stress with these women, was that your purpose should direct you and it should lead you in a balanced way. You should not ever feel obsessed with your purpose, although it may permeate your being. It may be very obvious when you walk into a room that everyone knows that you're a mom and a wife and you love your family and you're passionate about what you do in your business.
Mm-hmm.
They may know that the second you walk in the door, but you yourself will operate in peace and in balance because it's not a driving force like a gale wind that crashes
mm-hmm.
you and dashes you into the rocks. It directs you in the direction that you should go so that you reach your intended goal. And,
now,
when
you talk about that, I mean, and you know, the passion in the things that that you do as well as your clients and the women that involved with, how do you summarize in terms of what true wealth is and how can it be obtained in the sense that, you know, you have a list of things, obviously. So how do you define true wealth and how can it be obtained from your strategy?
The the first thing I do with a client when I'm sitting down with them to help them, to even before we even have determined whether or not we're going to work together, mm-hmm. I ask them to define true wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Because although we can have an esoteric idea of wealth, or we can put it into actual bank account numbers and list it in a column. Like people, we all like to see that bottom line. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. some people have identified and have relegated wealth to numbers they can see on a page or dollar mm-hmm. bills they can put into their bank account. Mm-hmm. And that wealth is limited. It's a part of wealth. It facilitates wealth, but what we have to understand is those numbers represent the currency that provides or facilitates your wealth. It is not wealth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And wealth, then, for each individual, may be defined differently.
Right.
People, so I don't try to, I think there would be a huge mistake for me to put wealth in a box and paint it a particular color and hand it to someone and say, now that's what you're going for. I let them determine mm-hmm. what is true wealth in their life and where they want to go at that stage in their life to obtain that true wealth. Invariably, when we take the blinders off or we remove those walls and say, what do you really want in life? What would make you feel wealthy? Then they go way beyond a dollar amount in a bank account. The first answer, honestly, a lot of times is, what would make you feel wealthy?
Right.
And very often they say, oh, an extra $100,000 in my bank account that was not, I didn't have to use it for anything. It was just there. I would feel so wealthy. And then I ask the question, why?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll stop, they'll pause, and they'll say, well, because then I wouldn't worry. Well, then I would feel like I could give to this or that. Well, then I would feel like I was in a position to start that business or that venture. And then they begin to get down, and I just keep asking the question why until mm-hmm. they get down to the very end where there are no more whys,
mm-hmm.
and that will define what true wealth is to them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, very, very interesting. Now, what can one do to reach their wealth according to your strategy?
Well, that's that we can put into a little bit more concrete terms, because you need to have a strategy. You need to have a plan. We may understand now what our true wealth goal is or our objective is, but now we need to map it out just like you would if you were taking a trip. You need to determine what freeway you're going to take. And to do that, we can look at several things. And first of all, as we've already mentioned, you must know your purpose and then define your objectives and goals by your values.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that in this whole process of obtaining it, if anything crosses your values, in other words, a real easy one that we can talk about right now because of the entrepreneurs that we're talking to,
right.
That if to get to a certain monetary goal, you would have to give up some value you have in the raising of your children,
mm-hmm.
whether that be time or the what you would invest in their lives as far as maybe the schooling or the education that you want for them, the time with them, if it would cross that value or it would violate that value, then that is not going to be, that you're not on the right path. It may still be the right goal, but the path that you need to take or the strategy you need to use will not violate your values.
Right.
And
well,
so,
but we live in a closed system, though. See, that's the thing, because we cannot create order somewhere else without creating disorder
mm-hmm.
somewhere else. And it's a balancing act, basically.
It is. It very much is. And it's something that you revisit at all times. A moment ago, I said, what freeway will you take? And that
right.
makes it sound like there's a specific road that, you know, that has lines on it, tells you exactly where
right.
to go, and you've got signposts. And it's really not that easy. It's much more like being out in the ocean
mm-hmm.
where you cannot see the undercurrents. And
mm-hmm.
yet if you are a skilled sailor, a skilled merchantman, you will understand where the merchant ship channels
right.
are, that there really are paths and channels through that vast open ocean. And the stars guide them, and they really, those who understand the ocean, understand that path, they see those paths. And that's,
you know,
much more what life is like.
That's true, because, you know, my mom once said this, each life has its own path. Each path leads to its own perfection.
Mm-hmm. Very well said.
And it's quite interesting, I mean, because success is in the eye of the beholder. Perfection is in the eye of the beholder.
Correct.
And so, as you had mentioned in the beginning of wanting people to write down what they value or what they view wealth is, or money and everything else, that's where they are actually setting up their roadmap, because you can't go in there and just tell, well, I think you need to do this.
Right, exactly. And it's very, it is very important for people to understand that you're in charge of the decisions that are made regarding your destiny.
Right.
Many other people will try to put themselves in charge of your decisions regarding your destiny, but you're the one who is in charge of those decisions. And at times, those decisions will align with other people's decisions, and you will enjoy that cooperation, that collaboration. And honestly, Johnny, there are times that you will feel that you're all alone, especially if you're a mompreneur. Maybe you've started a business and you've found a niche that no one else has found. Well, by definition, that means you're going to be doing something that no one else is doing right now.
Right.
And
right.
Good for you, because that means you're going to carve out something in the marketplace. But it also may mean that it's lonely, and you need to supplement that. And that gets back to the strategy for how you're going to obtain true wealth.
Mm-hmm.
If you align it with your values, and one of your values is to build relationships while you build your business with your family and your friends, and not to sacrifice that and have a balanced life, then you're going to have to build into your strategy alongside that real hard, maybe even lonely work, maybe the long hours that you have to put in the beginning.
Right.
You're going to build into that some time for yourself, some specific time for you and your family, some specific time for you and your friends. And I help women develop that into their strategy, helping them understand that true wealth is not a destination, but the journey is just as much a part of that true wealth.
Right. We have a caller here. Error code 214. Are you on the air? Hello? Yes. Can I have your name, please?
Linda?
Linda, welcome
yes.
to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. Do you have a question for Carice or myself?
Oh, no. I just tuned in. I'm sorry. I wanted to listen for a few minutes, if that's okay.
Oh, no. That's fine. Oh, yeah. People do that all the time, but what I do is that I normally have the courtesy of, you know, having you guys on the air in case if you do have a specific questions, being that this show is about, you know, managing things. And so gives the listeners an opportunity to ask questions live, okay? But just stay on the line, and if you at any time you feel like you want to talk, just feel free to come on in, okay?
All right, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Chris, coming back to the clients that you have, what is the common theme that you see in your clients before you get involved with their lives?
Interestingly, for women, a lot of times they begin to seek out some financial help, financial coaching or advice. They may go see a financial advisor or a financial planner, sometimes not until they've reached some kind of, unfortunately, a catalyst, and a lot of times that's defined as a crisis in their life.
Right.
And so a lot of the clients that come to me either because of divorce, disability, someone in their family is now disabled and they're now having to take over and manage and find a way to work with the finances, or death, or downsizing. They or someone in their family has lost a job and now they're having to rework their financial plan. They're having to look for new strategies. So, you know, it's just the nature of what drives people to look for help and to change the circumstances. You've heard the saying, insanity is doing the same thing but expecting different results.
Yes.
And that's when they come to a point that they realize, I don't want to be insane. I'm not going to keep doing. I can't keep doing the same thing. I've got to learn. I've got to take myself to a different level. And sometimes it's a catalyst like these things that I'm talking about. Sometimes it's just a client. Recently I had a new client come who said, in addition to shoring up some things about our finances, I have always wanted to start a business. And I know I have the skill. I know I have the information and the knowledge, but I just need to know how to put that into a business plan. And so she finally had come to a point in her life that she wasn't going to put it off anymore. She was going to use that skill and information and knowledge she had to help other people. So she kind of generated the catalyst. So a lot of times the common theme that people are coming to me is sometimes it's a negative theme of help. I need to understand what to do with my money.
Right.
Or how to get more money or how to manage so that I save more money.
Right. Well, you know, that's the common theme in terms of I think it's after the fact when you get it and then you realize that what am I supposed to do? Or we take things for granted sometimes because we think that everything will just work itself out. Now, how does your client measure success after you have helped them?
That is one of the things that I get really passionate and excited about is providing them those markers, helping them identify what are going to be those road signs that you've put up, those mile markers that you know that you're achieving the success that you want, and become the measuring stick or the plumb line that makes sure that you're building the success straight and strong that you want. And so we establish, based on their original purpose, their values, and their goals, markers that so that they can, in their plan, do a 1 month, a 3 month, a 6 month, and a 1 year, and even out to a 5 year assessment, and they can look at and know, here's where I am today, so that they don't become discouraged, because a lot of women are very passionate about a very big dream. They want to do something. Their purpose is really big. It's larger than them. In fact, to me, that's one of the keys of being successful is that you have to have a purpose that's bigger than you, that without outside collaboration and resources, you could never do it. If you didn't depend on someone bigger than you, if you did not look to those around you that you are blessed to be around, you would not be able to accomplish it. So, but if that's all we saw, we would seem very minuscule and we would seem very discouraged because how are we going to do that? So if we break it down into measurable, definable goals and objectives and then break those down even into daily pro-actions, and that's a word that I've coined and trademarked, that you don't want to just have action because people often confuse progress with action.
Right.
And it's not good enough just to have an action. It needs to be a proaction. Be proactive in what you're doing. And so we have a daily proaction plan based on their goals so that they can move forward and they can see and define the success that they're experiencing. And, Johnny, one of the most wonderful things is to be able to feel successful before you have the outward accoutrements. You know, we all look at somebody who's driving down the road, like our celebrities, and they're in a beautiful big car, and they step out, and they just look gorgeous, and we in the American culture have identified that as success.
Right.
And
well, everything
is
external and versus internal. And, and it's not necessarily a culture, you know, just American culture as a whole. I think you'd be surprised that I think it's I don't know whether it's a cultural thing as much as it is in some ways also how it's developed over the years, because I know certainly growing up in Asia, that's an issue also, because what people do is that the viability of, you know, like, well, money gives you happiness.
Right.
And money does not give you happiness. Happiness starts from within. And
correct.
So so that's, but it's out there. And somehow people value that perception. It's a perception thing. And
yes.
And so you're right by saying that, you know, well, wealth and everything else, your goal starts from within oneself. And so I agree with, you know, where you're coming from that perspective. We do have another caller, error code 972. You are on the air. Are you interested in, do you have any questions for Carice or myself? Hello?
I had actually called in just to listen to the show, not to ask questions, and it's
okay.
Interesting because this is Jan Tennyson.
Wonderful.
Well,
thank you for
Jan.
Listening.
Good. Well, I just am one of those people who get so overwhelmed with all the expectations of being in ministry and then the part about the retirement, which we don't even think is ever going to happen, becomes enormous. And so just the ABCs of learning the, you know, how to place your money and what to do with it when there's, you know, sometimes so little coming in, but yet you still have to focus on doing something different because otherwise you'll get the same results.
That's true. Very, very true. As a matter of fact, we are going to right to the next question here. We're going to be talking about generational wealth. And what I'm wanting to focus on is like women over 50, women in their 40s, women in their 30s, women in their 20s. What sort of generational strategies do you have to offer, Carice?
Well, Johnny, that is so great. And it is so, I'm so delighted that Jan is on the phone. Jan is a great friend of mine, and she just laid the groundwork for this question so beautifully. Jan is the president of a foundation that reaches out to at-risk youth. So she is very much involved in not only her own generation and helping people, but she is reaching down into those younger generations, helping young women and young men to get the 101s, you know, to get those basic classes and those, as far as the life classes is what I'm talking about. She's a wonderful woman, and I understand what she's talking about. And when you ask about generational wealth, when a lot of times my clients, I have clients at all ages come to me, and I wish, honestly, that I had a lot more young women coming to me in their teens and in their early 20s as they're starting their families and as they're starting their careers so that they can put into place some of these plans early on, because that, of course, the longer, you know, time is on their side. But not for anyone to be discouraged. There are plans and there are strategies no matter what age we are. And the big key for us to understand as we mature is that it is so important not only to plan for our life. Statistics show us that we're all living longer, that our lifespan is longer. And one of the things that I have on my desk that I hand to new clients is a birthday card that says "Happy 100th." and I let them look at it for a minute, and they look at me like, "What's this for?" And I said, "Do you know what the odds are that you will receive one of these cards?" And they always give me some real low number. "Oh, I don't think, you know, that would be amazing. I don't think so." But the odds are quite high that women who are 50 years old and under today will very much have a possibility of getting that 100th birthday card and beyond. And so planning is much more complex, but it is also much more joyful because at that age, we have a different perspective. We're a little more disciplined. We have learned some life lessons, so we can multiply and compound the effect of our planning for those years to come. But then the beauty I feel and what I love to see is women that are older teaching the younger women by example through mentoring and coaching their daughters and other women that they have in contact, that they're in contact with, so that they too can not only, as Jan was just mentioning, part of one of the things we look at is retiring. And I always laugh with my women. I say, "I understand what you mean by the word retire, but it just kind of has a negative connotation because it sounds like you're tired and you're retired." And so I like to talk to them about refiring. Mm-hmm. Don't retire, refire. There may come an age that you decide to not do all that you're doing right now or change what you're doing, but you're not going to sit down and quit. So we need to plan with that in mind, that you're going to transition, you're going to change what you're doing. You may do some things, honestly, that don't bring in the same amount of money, the same amount of income. So we need to plan for that. We need to think about that. But it will probably also mean that you have more time and resources to pour into your own life and those around you. Mm-hmm. So we look at those things at the different stages. I'm passionate about women at different stages looking to the generation just below them. And I like the way you ask, you kind of put it in the decades, that I like to ask 20 or 30-year-olds, "Do you have sorority sisters?" Or if you're a part of a sorority, you have a group of young group of women that you could turn around and you could share some of your your information. You're 30 years old. You're now in the workplace. You've got a little bit of experience from being a mom or a wife and being in the workplace. Can you share that with a 20-year-old? And invest in them. Sometimes it's not dollars. A lot of times it's information and knowledge, but it compounds their ability to make more money and to bless and to be a part of the community. And when we talked earlier about how we define true wealth, it's not just by our assets, but it really is by our intellect, by our spirit, and what we do in our family and our community. I love to help older women that are starting to think about their estate and how they're planning, help them set up what it's known technically as an ethical will. Mm-hmm. And what it is, it's those things that you pass on to the next generation that are not defined in hard assets or fixed assets. Mm-hmm. It's the values you want them to remember you by, the relationships that you want them to cherish. Write those things down and tell the next generation the things that God has done in your life, where you are and what's made you who you are. Tell that to the next generation so that they can use that and compound and exponentially grow in every arena of their life.
So what I'm hearing is actually this is very interesting because, you know, and you're right about getting 100 birthday card here, because my Italian foster mom in Missouri will be celebrating her 92nd birthday coming up in August. So I can understand that. So women, I mean, we are overall, men and women are living much longer now, and my I just spoke to my spiritual and progressive mom in Hammond, Louisiana. She's 91 years old yesterday and still going on strong. So I can relate to that. But coming back to what we were talking about, one of the things that I think which is very interesting, you talk about. Okay, fine. Now we got this monetary wealth, which is cash assets. And then what's interesting is that when, as I hear you talk, I realize that, especially for the older generation, they have wealth of knowledge, wealth of material things. Material things, for example, could be a painting or something of significance for the family, and that is, you know, it's not it's something of innate value because it's intrinsic value because it's something that there's a story behind it. And
right.
By sharing that with the newer generations, teaching the new generations that, you know, the wealth is an all-rounded aspect. Money, currency is one of it, but the rest of the issue here is more of this, all these little things that that has intrinsic value, that's far more, and that's why antiques in some ways has value to it.
Yes. Yes, and that, you know, one of the things that is would be so lovely, if I could get this across to everyone, whatever you have that is of value to you, it may be an antique. But it may not be an antique that some antique dealer would come and pay thousands and thousands of dollars. You might not get to go on the antique roadshow and be one that they, you know, discover some long-lost treasure. But it's a treasure to you. It's a treasure to your family. But instead of just passing the object, if you would write the story that goes with it. Why is it important to you? What does it mean to you? When did you get it? What does it mean to your family? And why are you passing it to the next generation?
Mm-hmm.
That becomes so powerful and so important to do with, well, as you said, paintings or maybe the
It could be anything. It could be.
Your home.
It's. I think it's the story behind it. In my experience, it's been the acquiring of such an object by that generation or that set generation is handed down. I know, like, for example, I carry my dad's wallet with me, and this is very interesting because I grew up in Malaysia. My dad at that time, this was back in the, I mean, my gosh, I guess he had bought this wallet in the 70s or so, and believe it or not, it's made of leather. And it's made in USA. And this is the unique thing. I mean, because, and of course, I was growing up in Malaysia. And now, of course, anything leather, it's made in China or elsewhere and everything else. You don't find products made in the United States very much.
Right.
So it's coming full circle to me, being that I've lived here for the last 20-something years, and I've just recently had it re-sewn because I'm using it every day, and it's a wonderful memento. My dad passed on in the early 80s, and so it's just a wonderful reminder of me, you know, that's something of value to me that's priceless from
right.
that perspective, and
that,
I hope
that
to keep it
powerful.
Yeah, with me for a long time. Yeah. Yeah.
That's powerful because that's I even encourage and really, really promote that, let's say you do have a large bank account that you're going to pass on. You have a large investment account that you're going to pass along to the next generation in your estate.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just handing them money, statistics and over the years, just history has borne out and shown that even large, huge, huge family wealth has been lost in three generations. The
mm-hmm.
first generation makes it, the second generation manages it, and the third generation loses it. And that because they don't understand where it came from and what it took and what their prior generations exchanged for that money. It just seems like it came to them free. And if we would pass along, even with our assets, our, you know, if we have a large bank account, if we passed along with that the story and the values that created that wealth,
mm-hmm.
then we wouldn't see it disappear. So
right.
Quickly.
Well, there's a sense of appreciation because
yes.
they don't understand the what it takes to acquire that, and there's no sense of appreciation because it's just given. And,
right.
and that in some ways, I'm not trying to deviate here, but in so many ways, I mean, wars, world wars and everything else, because freedom is given to a point where, you know, it's just taken for granted rather than
yes.
having that sense of appreciation of what, you know, it's all about. And
absolutely.
So, yeah. And so coming back to, you know, what we talk about wealth and everything else, that's why I kind of broke it down to over 50 and all the way,
mm-hmm.
you know, to early generations, because I think, you know, I mean, looking back, you know, someone told me, you know, save a dollar a day when you're 20 years old, you'll be a millionaire. You know, I said, oh,
right.
yeah, great. You know, only if I'd known then.
Exactly. Yeah. What do I do now? Because I've got some years to catch up.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And, well, let's talk about this, Managing Money 101, teaching kids about money and how important it is, because all mompreneurs statistically will show that these are the younger generations. They're in the 40s and in some cases in the 30s and 20s. How do you do that, Managing Money 101, teaching kids about money? How important is that?
It's extremely important, and in our society, I would say it is more needed than ever, and it's not being taught in our schools, it's not being taught in our education, and it's certainly not being taught through the media that our children are so tied into, and there are several things that I think are really important for mothers, as a mompreneur, you have the opportunity with your children. And I might just point out, because I have some clients who are a little bit older and now have grandchildren, and
mm-hmm.
they are the ones that have the opportunity, because maybe mom is in a corporate job and grandma has the opportunity to be around the grandkids, and she can teach some of these 101 values. I have a friend that did something as simple as this with his 3-year-old and his 4-year-old. He got up one day and he gave them each a marshmallow, a big, fluffy, white marshmallow, and he said to each of them, now, if you will hold on to this marshmallow and save it while we go and do clean your room, when we're through, if you will save this marshmallow, I will give you 3 more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the older one said, if I just set this marshmallow here and you'll give me 3 more after we clean our room? And his dad said, yes. And he went, okay. And he set the marshmallow down. And he was good with that. That was, he could comprehend, oh, this is a good trade. I like this. But the 3-year-old, having that marshmallow in his hand, he could smell it. He kept putting it close to his mouth. And he goes, Dad, could you just please, even if I eat it, could you please give me another one? And his dad said, no, the deal is you have to save it. And then you'll get more. And the little 3-year-old just, oh, it just bothered him. And he tried. And he would set it down. He'd come back to it and he'd just look at it. And he'd ask his dad again, can't I just eat it now and then you'll give me another one? And his dad said, no, remember our deal. And finally the little three-year-old, he made it. I mean, it was a great struggle for him, but he made it. He saved his marshmallow and he got three more. And he was so excited. He was so ecstatic when he got those three marshmallows. Now, that was a dad teaching on a level that a 3- and 4-year-old could comprehend.
Right.
But as they grew, he could translate that into, as he gave them their allowance, as he taught them about an investment account, a savings account, that if they would save it and set it aside now, instead of having to run and spend it right this minute, that it could grow, they could have more. And so I think it's so important that we use every little opportunity. Think of creative ways to talk to them. I have a 6-year-old, and we the other day he came in to me and he said, I need a job. And I said, well, why do you need a job? He goes, because you won't let me spend your money.
Right. And
I say, well, you're right. I said, what is it that you need to buy? Well, he wanted a game of some sort, and so I said, okay, well, then let's look it up. Let's see how much it is, and then let's see if we can find you a job. And he thought up different things, and he dog sat for his big sister and earned some money over the weekend, but it wasn't still enough. So he came to me again. Mom, do you have a job? And I had a job within my business that I could let him do. He could shred paper because I deal with people's financials. None of that, you know, I keep everything very private and secure.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So I said, you can sit right here beside me, and these are things that we have to destroy. I even taught him about protecting other people's privacy in the middle of that, even though that's not a financial lesson. It was something he needed to understand, that when you're given responsibility for other people, then you treat them with the utmost respect, and you care for their things as good or better than you would your own. So we had that little discussion, and so he started his, and I call him the recycling engineer. So he has
mm-hmm.
a little title, and he's earning money.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things like that that moms can do, dads can do, in those basic one-on-one skills, set them up. I have a little chart where I call it his bank account,
mm-hmm.
where if he and we even have a little interest rate on it, little things that so he begins to understand money management, because I didn't grow up with that, and I, you know, had to learn the hard way. And I think how much more valuable it would have been if he had learned that, and or if I had learned those things, and that he is getting to learn them. So there's lots of things. It's extremely important to invest in our children knowledge and wisdom how to manage their money.
Yeah, no, I understand. I agree with that. I think what you'll find is that when you start early, when they understand that the importance of money and the value, actually, that's attached to money, it gives them a different perspective. I remember going up, my dad obviously gave my mom the money in terms of managing the family affairs, and I would be given just $1 a day to fill up gas to go to school. And on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, I'm on my own.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to go out and play or whatever, hey, that's my problem. And
right.
What I'll do, I quickly learned that I could take care of my sister in the sense of bringing her to and from work and charge her for it.
Very enterprising there.
Yeah, you know, and it worked out very well, because then she ended up paying me, so that would be my spending money. And then I, in turn, also charge my mom in case if she wants to go anywhere, you know, and I'm the mode of transportation. So I say, hey, you know, this is how it works, and that's how I learned to accumulate a little money, just spending money, basically, growing up.
Right.
It's just very, very different. Now, let's talk about you being a mother. One of the interesting things is that, you know, in your own experience, and you obviously have generation gaps here, because your older kids in the late 20s and early, I guess, one at 30 and one at 28, if I'm not mistaken, and then you have a 6-year-old son.
Correct.
Now, I mean, God bless you. And what is when you compare this sort of a almost a 20-year gap here? What is obsolete and what's new and different in terms of bringing up a child and from a wealth and monetary perspective?
In that 22-year gap, because there is 22 years between our
mm-hmm.
daughter and our youngest son,
mm-hmm.
I think the thing that we recognized the most, because our daughter was in her senior year of college, our son was in law school
mm-hmm.
when we found out we were expecting
mm-hmm.
and realized we were going to do this all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I would say was truly, really obsolete, it was not really a good paradigm even for our older children, but lots of people bought into it and believed it, and that is that you grow up, you get a good education, you'll find it that will ensure that you get a good job, and then you're settled in, you're going to just progress from there. And as we were watching our kids, our oldest kids, come out of college and law school and seeing the hard work and them and their peers coming out of especially graduate school with some debt and realizing they were already behind the eight ball
mm-hmm.
just because they, both of our kids, that's one of the things that they did in college. They both worked through college to supplement their spending money and income so that we could pay for the college. They both wanted to go to specific schools, and but it wasn't easy. It wasn't all there magically. And they learned, and they worked all through college and did a great job. But when they came out, they didn't come out into luxury jobs. They did get good jobs because they were they worked hard. But it wasn't anywhere near the salary they had been promised or by society that, oh, if you get that kind of degree, if you come out of law school or you do this or you do that, then you're going to have blah, blah, blah. And we immediately, for Jonathan, realized that our six-year-old, that he needed to think in terms of education is important.
Mm-hmm.
Being in and developing relationships is important. But understanding and knowing who I am and where I'm going to go, my destiny is in my own hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I should never grow up with the mentality that somebody owes me something, that when I walk and when I complete this, this, and this, then I automatically get that.
Mm-hmm.
That you make your destiny. You make, especially in the physical, material, financial world, you, yes, you trust God. Yes, you understand that He has a plan for you and you follow that plan, but you have to be diligent about following that plan. No one else is going to hand you lifetime security.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a very positive way, we encourage Jonathan, we teach him different than we did our older children about what he is, how he's going to think and about his choices, and that there is no blanket formula for success.
Mm-hmm.
There are principles of success. There are guidelines to success, but you're the diligent person who has to put those all in place and find that path, as we were talking about earlier, in the midst of that ocean.
Now, does he get more stuff than, say, your daughter and your son got 20 years ago?
Yes, yes. And part of the reason is because he does have a big brother and big sister who
uh-huh.
Indulge him.
uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
He definitely does get more stuff. And I think in society in general, children today do have a lot more things that they receive or get or have,
mm-hmm.
just as a general rule.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, but it's interesting. It's sort of every generation has its own challenges and
yes.
and rewards, and unless we truly analyze it and compartmentalize it, because again, we talk about coming back to the very beginning where everything is a closed system. You cannot create order without creating disorder somewhere else. And then, and you and I have talked about this at one time where you yourself changed because you have more now than, say, you were, say, 20 years ago.
Yes. Yes.
And then, obviously, apart from, say, wealth, but if nothing else, you're more mature now than you were back 20 years ago.
Yes.
Not that you were not mature back then, but it's just in reality, that's a reality check. But then at the same time, the world has changed. Say, for example, 20 years ago, the demands of society and the or the happenings in the environment is not the same as it is right now.
Correct.
So that's all in the mix. It's almost like a gumbo pot that you know, it's still a gumbo. The flavor may have changed a little bit, but then it's still a gumbo. And so how does the chef handles that in terms of making sure that the flavors stay consistent between 20 years ago and now to make sure it, you know, it is still palatized, you know, by the current flavor that's needed to be to be served to, you know, to your children, in this case, you know, your child at 6 years old, and having obviously teaching him the values, I guess, the core values.
Right. So, I love your analogy of gumbo. I, too, grew up in Ponchatoula, which is a neighboring town to Hammond, and where your Cajun mama is. And I love gumbo. And yet growing up there, as you well know,
mm-hmm.
gumbo is made with whatever you have in your kitchen.
Precisely.
What you got from the bayou and the garden. And so you're right. It does. You deal with what you have. And yet there's a basic recipe. You have to know how to make the roux, and you have to understand the basics of gumbo. But once you have the basics of gumbo down, you can mix and blend the flavors to make them very pleasing to the palate with whatever you have at the moment. And that's a very good analogy of what we work with that in life, that no matter what age we are or our children are, there's a basic recipe that gives us the guidelines. But then we adjust to work with those anomalies and or changes in society that we're dealing with at the moment.
Right. What are the strategies that look good on paper but does not work in real life that you have encountered?
I'm so glad you asked that, because this gets back to what Jan Tennyson was saying a moment ago about being at an age where you're starting to look at and think about retirement. I think just blanketly I could say one of the things that looks good on paper is the generic financial plans that are presented to people very often, or you read a book and it says, well, if you save this amount of money for this many years at this average rate of return, those are the key words there, average rate of return, that looks great on paper. It's not real. It doesn't work in real life because there is no such thing as average rate of return. And if you run historical returns that from which they get those average returns, you get a very different picture, very different picture. For instance, think about the people who were planning to retire this year.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this year and late last year, they suffered tremendous losses in their retirement accounts, most likely. And if so, they're probably questioning whether or not they should retire right now, because if they do, they're going to be dipping into and drawing down those retirement accounts even more.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it going to take to grow that back? So I'd say one of the biggest thing that a lot of people have put on paper and looked good on paper but was very misleading, and many people actually made life plans based on that an average rate of return doesn't exist. And we really can't go by that. That's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but it's and it's easier to understand, but it's not reality. And we really need to delve deeper into our planning for our financial well-being for the future. When we're doing projections, we have to look at and understand risk analysis. We need to understand what are the obstacles or objections that might be in the future that I need to have a plan B and a plan C. Strategic planning and having a purpose-directed wealth strategy actually has several layers, because you can't just have one strategy. Recently, I heard about a very interesting study that was done with people who their job or their business is to make projections.
Mm-hmm.
People like economists and weathermen. And they were looking and doing personality profiles and studies of the people that get into those kinds of businesses. And weathermen were of a personality style that was able to just shrug their shoulders and say, well, I was wrong. I thought it was going to rain and it didn't. Oh, well, that's the weather. But when it got to economists never said I was wrong. An economist always says, Well, I was right, except there was a horrible earthquake in that region. Well, I was right, except there was this banking collapse. I was right, except there was this hurricane. I was right, except... And the end of this article pointed out, it said, since when did those risks never happen? They've
right.
always happened. It's just that they're random. And that
right.
frustrates us because we can't predict them. But
right.
nonetheless, we must factor them into our planning. And that's where I would say to people, when because you're probably saying right now, well, what do we do about that? You talk to a planner, a person who deals with asset allocation and is certified as a fiduciary or a financial planner, and ask them to do risk analysis as well as back testing so that you can see and deal with your numbers, not on an average, but on real live numbers and what has happened in the past to give you some idea what could happen in the future. And that gives you a much better picture for your projections.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you feel like you're going to come up short, you need to be dealing with somebody with you on your finances who can say, let's come up with other alternative plans, because your investment account is not the end of the day. It's not all said and done. You've got to look at and have multiple opportunities and look at those things in that way instead
right.
of just counting on my little 401k or my,
right.
even if it's a big 401k, that can't be your end all. You really
right.
need to think beyond that and have contingency plans as well as viable operating lifestyle plans.
Right. You have also started the Business Women for Success. You're the founder of Business Women for Success. Please tell us what this organization is all about.
It's all about cooperation and collaboration among business women. It is a not-for-profit organization. I founded it in 2004, and for many years we met locally here in North Dallas, and so it only reached a small group of people. We had in different experts, different people. Sometimes we had discussion groups, roundtable topics. And just recently, in fact, I'm making this, it's my first public announcement of this, I've taken Business Women for Success online to reach more people. And to start with, I'm going to build this in layers. To start with, I've started a Facebook page, Business Women for Success. If you're already on Facebook, all you need to do is just do a search for Business Women for Success, and it'll bring up that page, and you can become a part of that group. Facebook calls it fans, but it's not really a fan club. It's really a collaboration
mm-hmm.
group. But there's a place for us to discuss different things. And I'm starting off a discussion today, in fact, on planning and how we set up great life plans. And this is completely free. This is not to push a product. In fact, there will be no pushing of products, although there will be women from every different background. It's a fabulous opportunity for networking, but it's not a forum for selling. So no one needs to feel uncomfortable. It's a safe place to talk about women's issues as mompreneurs, as well as women in the corporate world. What are your challenges and what are your victories? It's a great place to share that and to learn and to grow.
You are also a co-pastor of the New Generation Community Fellowship in Carrollton. Please tell us how it has helped you with empowering you as a woman and as a mom.
Oh, that's incredible. My husband and I have been in the ministry together for over 30 years, but recently, a year and a half ago, we founded a church, a work of ministry here in North Dallas, and it's an extension of sharing with people, building relationships, and investing in their spiritual lives. We love to pastor people, to put our arms around them, pray with them through crisis, rejoice with them through victories, and to see them come into a personal, relevant relationship with Jesus and with God as their creator and understand all that he meant for them to have. And I can't even, there's no words to express what it does for me, to empower me, to excite me. Through this ministry, I also have the opportunity to go to Africa. And as I said before, Johnny, I won't get started because I'll never be quiet about that. I love getting to invest in the spiritual and material
yeah.
lives in Africa. sharing with them business principles from a biblical perspective. And
sure.
That's a lot of what we do, even here locally. But it's a phenomenal experience, a great and humbling experience.
Well, that's great. And we're coming to a close of the show. Quickly, do you have a recipe for living to share with our listeners this morning?
I do. And this is something that I'm so excited you asked me for that, because I love this. And it's and this is what I've shared through all of Business Women for Success as well as my business, and that's share, encourage, succeed. You will always find a higher level of success through cooperation and collaboration than through competition.
There you go. That's a wonderful recipe. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And to all our listeners this morning, thank you for spending the hour with Carice and I. Please tune in next Tuesday. My guest will be Michelle Deutsch, the founder of The Integrated Mother. We will be talking about bridging the gap between motherhood, work, and everything else. Thank you so much for listening this morning, and I appreciate everyone for tuning in. Chris, thank you again, and have a great week.
Thanks,
Chris. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.